Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings one and all, and welcome to another episode of Moments That Rock. I'm your host, Tony Michaelides. We're here every week, dishing out more gems from music industry insiders and artists, etc. Today's guest is Andy Peebles, renowned broadcaster of many, many years. But as per usual, we let them introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Andy Peebles, 50 years in broadcasting, including 13 years at Radio 1 in Britain. The inspiration for my wanting to be disc jockey stroke broadcaster came one day in 1965 when a removal van pulled up outside our house in Bishop Stortford in Hertfordshire, and two people, a husband and wife, were moving into the apartment above us. And I went out to, well, I suppose, be nosy and have a look. And the guy, who was very suave, debonair, had a big beard, said, "Hello, my name's Paul," and we shook hands, and it transpired that he was Paul Kay, who was the chief newsreader on Radio London, Big L, the pirate station. We became friends with Paul and his wife, Maureen. My dad had died in 1961. I think he'd probably be horrified at the career path I took. My mother used to phone me up every week and say, "Darling, lovely to hear your voice, but when are you going to get a proper job?" That became a family joke because she worked at the Bank of England. So meeting Paul, and in those days on Radio London, the boys did 2 weeks on the boat, then came off and had a week's leave. So I spent time with Paul when he was on leave, but obviously doing my homework at school, I would have Radio London on my transistor radio, and he used to do a show between 9 and midnight, and I just became entranced by it. And being as I was a mod, sit down, please, Paul Weller, you're a fake. I was a real mod in the real mod era. The music at the time was very inspiring. And Paul's presence just made me think, this is what I want to do. So my reference to being a mod was the fact that I had a scooter. And I would readily admit to you, Tony, that I used to ride round Hertfordshire on my scooter pretending to introduce imaginary records. Point away from madness, maybe. But it was the start of something which I eventually DJed at a big dance at school. We had a hockey festival every year, and my geography master, wonderful man called Kim Jones, who played hockey for England and Great Britain in the 1960 and 64 Olympics, he said to me, "Would you like to DJ?" And I said, "Yeah." And I only had one turntable, but I seemed to get away with it. People were dancing, so that gave me a bit of confidence. I left school, went to college in Bournemouth to study catering, and the catering department in the very first term said to me, "We want to organise a dance. Will you help organise it?" So I said, "Yeah, sure." I mean, I don't know why, but there seemed to be this belief that I was sort of steeped in showbiz. The truth was anything but. I was taking my first faltering steps. But I went to Samantha's, a discotheque on Pool Hill in Bournemouth, and persuaded or coerced Phil Joss, the manager, to let us hire the place. And I remember he said to me, "It'll be £20. You'll get a bouncer. You'll get me doing the door. You'll get two bar staff. you'll get a cloakroom girl. I should incidentally, here comes a big name drop, tell you that the cloakroom girl was called Monica Summers, and her big brother was Andy, who, of course, with Sting and Stuart Copeland, formed the Police. At the time, Andy was lead guitarist with Zoot Money and the Big Roll Band, who were about the hottest band in Bournemouth. Anyway, we hired the place. So when I said to Phil, we won't need a DJ, and he very sarcastically, I remember, said to me, why, what are you going to do, stand around talking all night? I said, no, if it's okay with you, I'll DJ. And at the end of the evening, to my amazement, he came up and grudgingly, with a smile, said to me, well done. So I said, it was all right, was it? He said, yeah, it was definitely all right. Would you like a job two nights a week? And I said, yeah, I'd love it. Well, both the regular DJs, Ronnie Jones and Tony Smith, left within the next couple of months, and I got the job full time. My mother was completely horrified and said to me, look, you're supposed to be training to manage the Savoy Hotel in London. What on earth are you doing working in a discotheque six nights a week? And I said, earning money to supplement my meagre grant and having a lot of fun. I was working for an entrepreneur called Louis Brown, who owned the Valbonne in London. He owned the Scottish St. James. He had 16 clubs at the time. And his henchman was a character called Stephen Less. And Stephen came down to Bournemouth to the club in his brand new E-Type Jaguar and said to me, we'd like you to do two nights a week at the Scottish St. James in London. And I said, wow. And I went and I did it. And Laurie J, who was the manager, who had been a bit of a celebrity on children's television behind his drum kit, did the usual introductory wind-ups. So on the first day, he gave me a shopping list and he said, I want you to go out of Mason's Yard, which is off Duke Street in Mayfair, and go to the bottom and you'll find that there is a shop which sells all sorts of things. There's a shopping list for you. And I started to walk down Duke Street and unfolded the piece of paper. And it said, four tins of tartan paint, 24 skyhooks. I mean, it was just a complete Mickey take. So I turned around and went back, and Laurie was standing, I remember, at the door, howling with laughter. But my first night DJing there, and I was lucky because I was at a lunch recently sitting with Brian Bennett and Bruce Welsh from The Shadows. And Bruce said to me, you've got an incredible memory. And I said, well, I said, I'm far from perfect, but it isn't too bad. He said, so you reckon the first night you DJed at the Scotch that I was there with Olivia Newton-John? And I said, I don't reckon, you were. I said, Tom Jones was in. I said, Barry and Maurice Gibb from the Bee Gees. And it was, to be honest, Tony, like being transported to another world. But Louis Brown had a very strict ruling that if he ever walked into any of his clubs and the dance floor was empty, the DJ, without any questions asked, would be dismissed on the spot. So I realised I was under massive pressure. Unfortunately, when Louis did arrive, the dance floor was packed. But it was great. And I did an interview with Tom Jones a good few years ago now. And we were trying to work out why we'd never met, because we are great soul brothers. We spent 20 minutes talking about Clive McFatter when he was lead singer of the Drifters and his solo career, because Tom's dad was a massive fan. And I said to Tom, I remember you coming up and asking me to play In the Midnight Hour by Wilson Pickett, which at the time was a relatively new release. And Tom said, oh, well, he said, you know, I just loved it. And I think he did a cover version of it somewhere during his recording career. So I did two nights a week at the Scotch. And then one night at Samantha's, two very posh public school boys arrived in Godfather terms, basically to make myself and my boss, Dick Merritt, an offer we couldn't refuse. which was to manage and DJ at a new venue called Chelsea Village in Bournemouth. Now, this was on the site of the Top Rank Bowl. They took out, I think it was 10 lanes, and turned them into a concert area, and then built a discotheque. The guy who was in charge of the club, Sound, was called Richard Littleton. In fact, he was the Honourable Richard Littleton, and he was Humphrey Littleton's cousin. We're still in touch. We're still great friends. And in 1970, when we opened the venue, he spent just on £20,000, which was a fortune, on sound equipment. We had Westrex speakers. We had everything you could imagine. It was just extraordinary. So I DJed there for 2 years. And then they opened their second venue on Glenfern Road in Stretford in Manchester at the Top Rank Bowl, where George Best used to take all his girlfriends because, as he told me, Mrs. Fullaway, his landlady, would not allow him to take any of his conquests back to her house. So George used to take them to the bowl and see what occurred. It's the polite way of putting it.
Those were the days.
Well, we had lots of laughs about it. He became one of my dearest friends. I suppose I could say that at one stage I was slightly concerned at the amount of alcohol that I was drinking. But George was very devious. I don't mean that in a nasty way. He was clever. He would bring people around him who were content to drink with him, which therefore gave him the perfect excuse to drink.
Yeah.
I discussed this with him, with Dennis Law, with Bobby Charlton over the years, and it's utterly tragic that he's no longer with us. So we opened on the, I think it was the first, it may have been the 2nd of September, 1972, with David Bowie.
Never heard of him.
Story, because David had been booked in to play the Free Trade Hall, and his then manager, Tommy De Vries, was given a £1,000 cash bribe by my two mad bosses, Mike O'Shea and Nigel Corbett, and they said, put that in your pocket and pull David out of the Free Trade Hall and come and play for us. And he went for it, and David did play for us. So this was at the height of the Spiders from Mars. So Trevor Boulder, Mickey Woodmansey, Mick the guitarist, and David the singer were absolutely brilliant. They did two nights.
So is this 1973?
No, this is 1972, September.
Right.
So he came back, I think, might have been into 73, but in the history of Manchester music, the hard rock played, I think, an important role. We had everybody you could think of. Paul McCartney and Wings, Ike and Tina Turner in the Review, James Brown and his band from America, with Jabbo Starks and Clyde Stubblefield on drums, two of my great heroes. We had Elton John, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Genesis. I mean, if you looked at the list, it was the who's who of music in 1972/3.
Am I right in thinking that the opening two nights, Andy, were the Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think Santana played. The list goes ever on. Back in those days, of course, you remember you were there, but didn't have a revolving stage when the gig ended and then you did the disco from like 10, 11 onwards.
Well, you've got a very good memory and you're absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. But the one thing you haven't got right, and it's not your fault, is that about 3 weeks ago, they raised the building to the ground. Yep, the B&Q Centre has gone. My friends at the cricket club, with whom I'm very close, having covered cricket for the BBC for 27 seasons, think that they're going to build a block of flats or houses. So, yeah, it's gone. And, you know, with it goes history.
Absolutely.
It blew up in our own faces on a night in the summer of 73 when Rod Stewart and the Faces were topping the bill on a Sunday night. And the temperature on stage was 112 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh my God.
And in the middle of Twisting the Night Away, where Kenny Jones played the drum break to get it going again, as he played it, he fell backwards off his stool, passed out, and was taken to the Manchester Royal Infirmary. Consequence of which, Tony, was that the following week, the Melody Maker, New Musical Express, Disc, and all the other papers had headlines like Manchester's number one sauna likely to close, which was irreparable damage. And a multitude of promoters immediately got on the phone to cancel their gigs, which was heartbreaking.
You live and learn. I never knew that's why the Hard Rock closed. Anyway, the whole building's been demolished now. It was a hardware store, B&Q, for those that live in England will know that. Many, many, many splendid nights spent there, especially the first one, watching David Bowie and the Spiders from Mars. On both nights, in fact, at the Hard Rock. You've been listening to Andy Peebles with some great stories on Moments That Rock. We'll be back with more stories from Andy.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
After this.
The one gig I do remember, you may have to edit this because I'm going to tell it like it was that we had Led Zeppelin booked. Now, in the summer of 1968, I was the assistant social secretary at Bournemouth College of Technology. And Christine, who was the social secretary, knew absolutely nothing about pop music. So she said, I'm leaving this up to you. So I booked the Nice with Keith Emerson, the VLP, on keyboards, Davy O'List on guitar, Lee Jackson on bass, and Blinky Davidson on drums. I'm sorry about this, but Mike Reed and I, in my years at Radio 1, used to sit down with a coffee and challenge each other to name entire lineups of groups. And it's become a sort of obsessive habit. So I booked the Nice, but I also booked an American singer called Tim Rose. Now, Tim had one hit record. It was a song called Morning Dew. And it was absolutely fabulous. Came out on CBS Records. And he, as so many Americans did, to use the colloquialism, picked up an English backing group for his tour. And on the day of the concert, I went to the pavilion, and as I was walking down the corridor to the ballroom to make sure that everything was in place for the evening, I heard drumming. That's an understatement, because having been a very poor drummer myself, I drummed with our pop group at school, I'm listening to whoever it was that was on stage playing and thinking to myself, my goodness me, how do you play triplets like that? And I walked in and the guy behind the kit never flinched. And I sat down on the floor, a bit like a 1967-8 hippie. And he played for, I think, just over an hour. And finally, he stopped and he put his sticks down. And he said, "Hey, mate, I don't know who the hell you are, but you're a glutton for bloody punishment." And he walked down off stage, put his hand out. He said, "Hi, my name's John Bonham." And I said, "Hi, John." Not knowing on that day what was going to come.
Yeah.
So up to 1973, Bonham arrived for the gig wearing a huge greatcoat overcoat. In the left-hand pocket was, I can't remember whether it was vodka or gin, but it was a bottle from which he was obviously slurping whenever he wanted a drink. And in his right-hand pocket, he had the largest bag of cocaine I had ever seen. So Bonzo, by this stage, along with chucking televisions out of windows and all the other stories, had become the perfect rock star. But what I do remember, and you'll pardon the French, was that Peter Grant, their man mountain of a manager, somebody with whom you did not argue, arrived at the office, knocked on the door. I was sitting behind my boss's desk. And he said, "Hi, I'm Peter Grant." So I said, "Yes, Mr. Grant, I'm well aware of who you are. How are you?" "Oh, never mind that," he said. "Where's my effing money?" So I said, "My boss has just gone to the bank to get it." And almost on cue, Richard appeared behind him with 7,000 quid in cash, because we paid them £3,500 for each of two shows. And I can only say, Tony, that they were absolutely sensational. That concert hall held 2,500 people. They sold out twice. It was one of the greatest concerts ever at the venue. And John Bonham again played for about 45 minutes on his own. And I sat there with Zeppelin's sound mixer and with their very famous road manager, Richard Cole, who became a friend over the years.
I interviewed Richard Cole about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, lovely, lovely guy. I'm proud to call him a friend. Bonham came and sat and talked drums with me. And I said, "Listen, John, I'm not fit to lace your boots." I said, "You can do with one hand what I can't do with both hands and 2 feet." But it was like a masterclass. And I've been obsessed with drummers. I mean, in the days when I used to go to our local dance hall on a Saturday night, Cream came to play one of their earliest gigs. Well, they came to the Road Centre in Bishop's Stortford. I suppose I should say it's now called the Arts Centre, because Cecil Rhodes, who had grown up in Bishop's Stortford, had given his name, or they'd used his name, but of course, because of slavery, the name of Rhodes has been bulk erased from pretty well everywhere around that lovely little market town where I grew up. Anyway, the Cream were there, and Reg Reed, who was the promoter, had become a friend of mine, and he used to let me in early. And I love doing this because it will remind you and me of the great Mike Harding.
Yeah.
This is a line pinched from Mike. And I walked down to the stage, and Baker, who was in the process of putting up his double bass drum kit, turned around and went, "Who are you?" So I said, "My name's Andy. I've just come to ask you whether you'd like some help putting your drum kit up." And he only said two words to me, one to do with sex and the other with travel. "Thank you, Mike Harding." So that was my first encounter with Ginger. And I was a bit disappointed, because I'd seen him when he played with the Graham Bond organization in about 63-4. I mean, I was far too young to have been in any of the clubs I went to. I must have seen Georgie Fame at the Flamingo about 10 times by telling blatant lies to the doorman. Me and our guitarist from the pop group Malcolm used to go. So yeah, I become fanatical about soul and rhythm and blues, and I've been lucky enough, you know, to watch some of the great groups of the era, not all of whom became well known. There was a wonderful band from Southampton called the Soul Agents, and they had a Hammond organ player called Don Shin. And I remember having dinner with Elton John probably about halfway through my 13 years at Radio One, and we got talking about Hammond organs. And I said to Elton, were you never tempted? And you won't be surprised to hear that Elton, in inimitable style, said, tempted by organs, dear. Oh, yes, I've always been tempted by organs. And I said, no, shut up and stop it. And he actually mentioned Don Shin and said that he thought Don was one of the greatest Hammond players. He said, second to Brian Auger, he was probably the best I ever.
What about Steve Winwood? And yes, the conversation with him. The great thing about Winwood was, obviously, he's got that classic Hammond organ sound, but he embraces technology as well. Just going back to Richard Cole, when I interviewed Richard Cole, he told me that Led Zeppelin would always get paid before going on stage, and they would go backstage, and the promoter would open the drawer, and they'd have a wad of cash and a gun on top of it. And I remember going to In the City conference in Manchester, and Peter Grant was doing a conversation with Ed Bicknell. And one of the questions he asked him was, did you ever think of replacing John Bonham? And you could see the lump in his throat. He said that there is no Led Zeppelin without John Bonham.
Well, let me very quickly run through the broadcasting. Yeah. I was at Hard Rock in Manchester for a couple of years. I got headhunted by BBC Radio Manchester. Apparently, Derek Woodcock, who was the programme organiser, had heard good things. And I did an audition for him. And he immediately offered me Saturday mornings on BBC Manchester. I was there for just over a year and then joined Piccadilly Radio. I was at Piccadilly Radio for 4.5 years and then was headhunted by Radio One. They apparently have been getting Tony Hale, the Manchester Radio One producer, to send cassette copies of my Soul Train programme, which, if I'm allowed to brag, the once had turned into something pretty successful. I mean, so much so that people used to drive over the M62 to get into our listening area so that they could listen to the programme. So I went to Radio One, and to come back to the point that you're very neatly making, in the 13 years that I was there, amongst the programmes I did, was a programme which originally was presented by Brian Matthew and was called My Top 12. And when I was asked to rebirth it, I'm just looking for the word, because it hadn't been on for a few years, and they decided to do it. And I said to Derek Chinnery, who was the first of my two controllers at Radio One, could we not make it my top 10? Because my only complaint about Brian's version of the programme was that very often you felt you'd had loads of music, but you hadn't heard enough from the guests. So if we take out two records, that should give us 7 or 8 minutes more talking time. Now I am going to brag. I think I checked this recently with BBC Archive. I think it was 320 editions of the programme. You're talking to somebody who is very proud to have interviewed John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Paul Simon, Art Garfunkel. I won't go on, but the list is enormous, absolutely enormous. And in a way, Tony, what fascinated me very often about that series was people coming back into my musical life. And you've done brilliantly because you've mentioned Robert Plant. Now, when we invited Robert, I remember him coming to the studio and he looked at me and he went, I know you. Yeah. And I said, no, I think you probably think you do. We had met, but it was 1973 at the Hard Rock in Manchester.
Wow.
And he looked at me and he said, good God. And he said, how lovely to see you. So we sat down and we got going. And he's telling me utterly brilliant stories about being a mod in Wolverhampton and having a scooter and listening nonstop to R&B and soul. And I obviously asked the question, so where did rock and roll, Black Dog and Stairway to Heaven come from? And he said, don't you think they're soulful? I always remember that. And I said, yeah, of course I do. But, you know, Robert was great. My other very happy memory of that series was Eric Clapton. I obviously, like you, knew that Eric had had tremendous drug problems. And he turned up. I can see him now. He was wearing one of the most beautiful three-piece suits I've ever seen. He claimed that he paid nearly £1,000 for it in Savile Row. He was wearing a fob watch with a gold chain. And he walked in and I said, bloody hell, Eric, you didn't need to dress up. And he started to laugh and he said, I'm going to the theatre. And I said, oh, right. He said, yeah, when we finished here, I'm going for a bite to eat. And then I'm going to the theatre. And I said, what are you going to see? And he said, The Mousetrap. And I started laughing because by that stage, it had been on for about 55 years. And Eric said, well, I've never had a chance to go and see it. So today's the day. But I then said to him, I've very happy memories of seeing you play with the Yardbirds. And he smiled and he said, go on. And I said, well, I always remember that you had two Vox AC30 amps with a link plug. And he looked at me and his chin dropped and he went, wow. And I said, why wow? Well, he said, I'm happy to explain. He said, when like me, you've been addicted to heroin, that drug bulk erases large parts of your memory. Nobody had mentioned that I used two Vox AC 30 amps for about 30 years, and I will forever be in your debt for rekindling a memory, and you're absolutely right. Yesterday, Tony, I had 20 minutes on the phone with one of Manchester's great musical sons, my dear friend Graham Gouldman. You may remember that Eric cited For Your Love, written by Graham Gouldman,
yeah.
That's one of the reasons why he wanted to leave the Yardbirds. And I put that to Eric and he said, look, I've huge respect for Graham. I thought 10cc were brilliant. They wrote some fantastic material. But he said, I just, in that era, didn't like For Your Love. So, yeah, Eric was a fantastic memory. I remember Paula Yates coming in. She was pregnant. I can't remember with which of her and Bob's children. She was completely outrageous. I mean, she came around the desk and sat on my lap about five times. She was just, in a very classy way, she was very flirtatious. And lovely. So week after week, you know, Boy George, Phil Collins, Dusty Springfield, Curtis Mayfield, Smokey Robinson. We didn't do Marvin Gaye. We missed the opportunity. But, yeah, that was a great series to be involved with. Well, one of the photographs behind you, which is obviously a Beatles album cover, I've been looking at all through the interview. And I must close by telling you a story which may tempt people, if we get back together, to listen to. When we arrived at Mr. Chow's, the famous Chinese restaurant on the West Side in New York, after doing 3 hours and 23 minutes, the longest interview I've ever done with anyone, we walked into the restaurant, and the restaurant was below ground level. So you walked in, you stood and waited for the maitre d' to come up the stairs. And we got to the end, and John put his arm round my shoulder and said, AR, Andrew, he said, just look at everybody down there. And the whole restaurant had turned round because, you know, here was a giant of the music business. And he said, yeah, just look at them. And they're all saying, who the fucking hell's that with Andy Peebles? It was so funny, so funny.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Andy. We shall have you back.
Well, I'm very glad Zoom works so well. It's incredibly efficient. Stay in touch.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Absolute gold. Totally love it. Andy Peebles with many, many stories. And the end, a bit about John Lennon.
We will be bringing Andy back to tell us the story about the interview he did, commonly thought as being the last one with John Lennon before his death in 1980, although Andy says otherwise, but we'll let him explain when he comes back. Great stories. You've been listening to Moments That Rock with me, Tony Michaelides. Today's guest, as I mentioned, was Andy Peebles, and we will be back next week with more. Subscribe, review, and come back for more. And go and check Pantheon podcasts out because they're all music-related podcasts. See you next week. Bye-bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.